League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Packers fans, and welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Ryan Wood, but we have a new guest today, Pete Doherty. Pete, welcome to the Green 19 podcast.
Well, it's an honor and a privilege, and I'm pretty sure the first time that I've done this.
Really? Yeah. Well, we do feel honored by your presence. Pete and Ryan are currently in Florida. Only tiny bit jealous as it's 30 degrees here, as you can hear the kids in the background running to the pool. They are there with every NFL owner, coach, and coach's family for the annual NFL owners meeting.
We are on GM row right now, basically. So just to give you a little snapshot, Cassie, what we're looking at. Well, one, it's the Atlantic Ocean, so that's nice.
Nice.
But it's the backside of the Breakers Palm Beach Resort, where we did speak with Ryan Gutekunst yesterday. And you never know who you want to see coming up and down this little walkway right on the ocean. You know, all kind of owners, GMs, head coaches. Those kids, I have no idea who they are, but they wouldn't be surprised if you know, they belong to one of the three categories there. So, you know, it's a very interesting setting. You never know who you're going to run into here.
Yeah, I think you even got interrupted by John Schneider yesterday.
So I did. I was, the words were right out of my mouth. I was asking Brian Gutekunst something about Aaron Rodgers, how long he envisions him playing, whether he thinks he's going to retire as a Packer. And this guy behind my right shoulder interrupts me. And my first thought is like, who is this guy? And he asked Brian Gutekunst, who's your second favorite boss of all time? And Brian Gutekunst took it in stride, which was the first indication that, you know, this wasn't some random guy, because if it was, I don't think that Brian Gutekunst would have been as calm. And he said, well, my wife, number one, and Ted Thompson, number two, which is, of course, a good answer. And it was John Schneider, who obviously knows Brian Gutekunst very well. So I'd actually never met John Schneider before. I'd asked Pete, who was that? And Pete knows John Schneider very well. So, yeah, it's a very, very interesting setup here.
It sounds like it for sure. And a lot of decisions made during this annual meeting, and we're going to get into the Packers here and dive into everything that the two of you have talked about with General Manager Brian Gutekunst and Head Coach Matt LaFleur. But first, just quick thoughts on the news that came out of the owners' meeting today, which is that the overtime rules have been changed for the postseason. Pete, I'll let you jump in here first. Do you think this is just them experimenting? Is this pacifying upset fans and coaches, or is this something that could stick and even become a full-time regular season change where each team will now get a possession in overtime, at least in the postseason for 2022?
Yeah, it's an incremental thing. So there's an experimental element to it, but I could easily see it being something that they stick with. You know, they're trying to keep the games as short as they can, the overtimes as short as they can for, you know, their supposed concern about player safety, but playoff games, I get it that I agree that both teams should get a shot at the ball in overtime. I mean, it's almost with how prevalent scoring is with the way the game is played today. I mean, it's almost like playing a basketball game and tipping the ball off and whoever scores first wins, you know. I mean, that's that would be a strange way to handle basketball overtime.
Yes, it would. And there would be a lot of gripes about that as well. Ryan, do you like this change in the rule?
Yeah, my first thought was 2014. And then I thought of 2015, back-to-back years, the Packers lost in the postseason the
NFC Championship game at Seattle, the divisional round game in Arizona without Aaron Rodgers touching the football. And it's, yeah, we don't know if that would have changed history. We have no idea. That's the point, right? We'll never know. Maybe it would have. Maybe legacies are different. Maybe not. We don't know. But I think it's best for the game. I think it's best for the integrity of the competition to be able to find that answer out, to give both teams the ball first. And not to, you know, on a league level, this is a direct result, a direct reaction to Chiefs versus Bills, which was some of the finest football that any of us has ever seen. I mean, it was remarkable. You want to see a game like that continue. Not just Packers fans, obviously Packers, but who wouldn't have wanted to see the 2014 NFC Championship game continue? Who wouldn't have wanted to see the 2015 divisional game in Arizona when Aaron Rodgers had just completed a Hail Mary to Jeff Janis, and then just the very next position, the possession, first possession of overtime, Larry Fitzgerald swings the game back and runs across the field and sets up a touchdown. Who would want to see that game continue? Overtime games in the playoffs are the best football. You want to see that kind of game continue. And it, again, I think from an integrity of the competition standpoint, it really does level the playing field both ways.
Speaking of, I guess, sort of leveling the playing field, the Packers will spend the next year or so seemingly working to up their infrastructure to rebid for the NFL draft. They were one of three finalists to host the 2024 NFL draft and found out yesterday that that draft will now be held instead in downtown Detroit. I know that that immediately was met with jives and criticism on Twitter. I was pleasantly surprised with downtown Detroit when we went there in January. It was much cuter and historical and interesting than I thought it would be. So I can see the league wanting to hold it there. But, I mean, Pete, you've been doing this for a long time. You've been around Green Bay a long time. Do you think that we can get to a point where Green Bay could host an NFL draft?
So, you know, I'm not sure. I think if you polled the people who cover this team, I mean, just judging by what I've seen on Twitter and maybe, you know, briefly talking about it, I think most think that it couldn't do it. I don't see why it couldn't. With the hotels in the valleys, people have to stay in Milwaukee for sure. The convention center is big. I think Ryan thinks that Green Bay couldn't do it. And I could be dead wrong on this. It's not like I've studied it closely. Rich Ryman on our staff would be the guy who would probably have the best feel for this. But you know, you'd have a lot of people coming from just driving around from around the state. So I don't know if they would need hotels. What, it draws 100,000 people, I think. So there'd be people from all over the country, of course. I'm thinking they could pull it off. And if they need to go inside, the new convention center is big enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, Pete. You know, the convention center, the Rush Center itself might, either one, the convention or the Rush Center, might be able to host the draft fine. But, you know, does the town itself have the infrastructure to be able to handle the influx of people? But that's another discussion for another time. We will see if Green Bay can put together a bid to host a draft in future years. In the meantime, Ryan, they've got to get their roster ready for this year. And that roster is going to look a lot different now that it does not include Devontae Adams. Earlier this week was the first time that reporters have been able to speak with general manager Brian Gutekunst since that trade was made. And I know you had a great piece about it on PackersNews.com this week. People can go read it there. But just kind of give us a rundown of what went into that trade based on what Goody had to say about it and the inevitability of it.
And the bottom line to me was whether or not Brian Gutekunst thought there was any plausible path forward that included Devontae Adams playing football for this team in 2022. And that's what I asked him. He made it very clear that this was the only way it was going to go. Whether he was traded or not, he did not see Devontae Adams playing football for the Packers in 2022. So at that point, there was no choice but for the Packers to trade Devontae Adams. They obviously got a first and second round pick out of the deal. Lots been made about how it's different than what the Packers did with Aaron Rodgers a year ago. I remember asking Brian Gutekunst on draft day last year whether he would entertain the idea of trading
Aaron Rodgers? And he said, absolutely not, unequivocally no. So why was this different? I mean, look, bottom line is that one's a quarterback and one's a receiver. They're both great. They're both great players. You know, we talked about Devontae Adams potentially being on a Hall of Fame track. Aaron Rodgers is obviously a first ballot Hall of Famer. They're both great players. But at the end of the day, in this league, the difference between quarterback and any other position, including receiver, is night and day. And that is why this outcome was night and day. Packers did what they had to do. They, you know, and Matt LaFleur even said Tuesday morning at the coaches' breakfast, he said that this was really engineered. This is guided and directed by Devontae Adams. He wanted out, and they're moving forward. Matt LaFleur really had very little interest in revisiting the whole process, because his mind is going forward, and they've got a lot of work to do when it comes to receiver, restocking the perimeter playmakers in this offense. Aaron Rodgers is facing a reality that he never has before when it comes to the playmaking, receiving talent that surrounds him. First MVP season in 2011, that receiving group was loaded. It was less deep in 2014 when he won his second, but he still had Jordy Nelson as a second-team All-Pro, and Randall Cobb as a Pro Bowler, and Devontae Adams was the rookie. You had Devontae Adams really since then. They've never had this dearth of talent and bodies, even when it came to the receiver position. They've always reloaded there, and now they're rebuilding for the first time. So, it's bottom line was that Devontae Adams was not going to play, and they got they doubled their picks in the first 59 selections of this draft, and are going to rebuild.
There has been a lot of debate, understandably so, about can it be rebuilt right away through free agency, or is this something that needs to be rebuilt through the draft? Did you get any sort of sense from Brian Gutekunst on the path he wants to take here to rebuild that core and the offense as a whole?
He didn't say. They basically said it's going to be collective. Just looking at the resources they have, unless they're willing to trade one of those high picks, if not a couple, for a receiver, if they were going to do that, they would have just kept trying to keep it, tried harder to keep Adams. So I think the resources are limited for going after a veteran receiver. I would have to think they're going to bring somebody in who's caught some passes in the league and played a lot of snaps. But I don't see how they don't use a receiver get at least one in the first two rounds. Very, very, very likely in the first round. And if they took two in the first two rounds or the first three rounds, which would be their first five picks, I mean, that wouldn't be a surprise at all. And I think they're going to need some help from a rookie receiver more than you can generally bank on getting from a rookie receiver. The history, isn't real great at that position for those guys producing in their first year, even if they end up being really good. The Jamar Chases and Justin Jeffersons of the world, they're the exception by a long shot compared to, Devontae Adams didn't do much his rookie year, and look what he turned out to be. So it'll be a real challenge, but it can be done, and it's going to be up to then, Gutekunst to pick a guy who can do it, and then the coaching staff and the quarterback to get the guy where he can help him, a guy who could catch 60, 70-plus balls as a rookie.
That's good insight, Pete. While you have been there, while you and Ryan have been there, and Pete, I'll let you start, and then Ryan add in if you have anything to add. As you've been around these other coaches and GMs and reporters and media from these other teams, have you heard anything or gotten any sort of sense that maybe there is still a trade on the table for the Packers to bring in a blockbuster free agent receiver?
I have not gotten that sense, and there's been I haven't seen any rumors. But as we've seen, even in just the last week, things spring out of nowhere, seemingly nowhere. And this is a place where deals could get done because they're all here and they can meet a lot more secretly here than they can at the combine, where, everything is, all the restaurants and bars are full of reporters and scouts for other teams. Well, here it's just the owners, GMs, and coaches. So who knows what's going on behind the scenes. If I had to bet, I would bet it'll be a middling move at veteran receiver and then big in the draft at receiver, but you never know.
So what you're saying is deals, shady deals get done in Florida.
There's a lot of swamp land down here if you need any.
That just seems like a fact of life right there to me.
Matt LaFleur made the same point that Pete just made this morning. You know, he said that, you know, 2 weeks ago, no one saw Devontae Adams getting traded. You know, the reality is that these things happen very quickly when they do. I believe DK Metcalf gets traded to the Packers when I see it. I think that's more of a fantasy football thing. There could be a trade out there. I think, and I've said this before, I think bottom line, the Packers have got to hit on their draft picks when it comes to that position. You know, Pete gave me maybe the best piece of advice that I've gotten since I started covering this Packers beat. You know, the things that made me my first draft back in 2015 when he said, you know, what they're thinking in the room is often the opposite of what you're thinking outside the room. And so what are we thinking outside the room right now? Receiver. It's got to be receiver. Everything's receiver. They got to draft the first round, maybe a second round receiver. It's got to be early. Well, when you look at the roster construction of this team, they've got a defense that Brian Gutekunst said before the combine was salty enough to go win games. And frankly, it was. It did. I mean, even in the last game of the year that they lost, it was good enough to win that game. I mean, we keep the opposing team out of the end zone in a playoff game, you expect to win that game. And they've only added to it. Not only retained Rasul Douglas and Devondre Campbell, but they've added Jaron Reed. So they've added to that defense. And you look at the offensive side of the ball, if David Bakhtiari and Elton Jenkins can come back from their ACLs and play like who they are, that's a really good offensive line. And you know what they've got behind Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, who Matt LaFleur said again today, and he said this forever, that's a pair of number one premium running backs. So all those pieces might limit the importance of receiver. I'm not saying that they've got a draft and that they've got to rebuild that position. But even with rookies coming in and maybe some slow time to adjust and get up to the NFL speed, this is a team that's kind of built to withstand that because you've got a defense, you've got a run game. It's a very differently built Packers team than you've seen in the past. And it that should be advantageous.
Pete, as Ryan mentioned, big get in retaining Rasul Douglas. The Packers retained Rasul Douglas. They have Eric Stokes going into his second year. Chandon Sullivan signed with the Minnesota Vikings, and Jair Alexander, by all appearances, will be back. Is it safe to assume, based on – we had already talked about this. I know you had a good piece on it. But after talking to Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur, do we feel even more confident that it's safe to assume Jair Alexander will take over that slot role now with Rasul Douglas and Eric Stokes on the outside? What sort of sense do you get from the coaches and GM about that secondary unit?
I don't think so. They've been, you know, they're pretty coy about what they're going to do. I don't think they want to tell everybody they're playing this year what their plans are so those teams could prepare for it all off season. You get the feeling it's going to be a mix and match. I think with Alexander, we don't know for sure. I think the thing to look to with Alexander is how the Rams used Ramsey and how they still use him. You know, that's the example Barry has from 2 years ago when he was with the Rams. You know, it's the same scheme. And I think 2 years ago, Ramsey played 18% of his snaps in nickel. And last year it was 31. So I'm guessing Alexander will be somewhere in that range. You know, there'll be some games where he covers the best guy wherever he lines up. There'll be other games where they'll want him in the slot. And there'll be other games where they play him almost always on the outside. It just depends on the opponent. When the Rams played the Packers in the playoffs 2 years ago, Ramsey played probably five snaps tops in the slot because he covered Adams all game, so he was always on the outside. But there were other games where he played most of the game in the slot. So it was a week-to-week thing. I think that's how it'll be with Alexander. That'd be my best guess. And I'm thinking Douglas is the most likely of the three, with Stokes being the third, to, you know, play a fair amount in the slot. Stokes is so fast, I think it wouldn't be a waste of his long speed to to play him in the slot. And Douglas, he's tall, which is, you know, you don't want tall guys in the slot, but he is, he's instinctive and really smart. So that can offset, you know, some of the quickness disadvantage that he'd have. So I'm guessing it'll be a combination of the group and with maybe Douglas getting the most snaps in there. And like LaFleur alluded to today, you know, there's always injuries in this league, always. Those guys go down a lot. And there's probably going to be a lot of weeks where only two of the three are available anyway, and somebody else will be playing in the slot.
And not to discount what each of them can do, because it's all valuable, but you almost feel like the outside corners have to play with a little more finesse, while the slot corner plays with a little more physicality. And with that in mind, it would make sense to put Alexander there in the slot and leave Stokes and Douglas on the outside. Let's just a little hypothetical here. This doesn't have to be a long discussion, but let's just real quick hypothetical. Pete, I'll start with you. If you could field your ideal secondary based on what's currently on this roster for the Packers, who would you have out there at all three corner spots and at safety?
If you didn't have to worry about the injury factor and longevity, I'd put Alexander in the slot, but he's such a good player, I'd be hesitant to put him in there too much and get him all banged up and shorten the prime years of his career. So I guess actually I wonder why they don't play Savage in there still. Now, maybe he's just not instinctive enough or something, who knows, but he seems like he'd be the best candidate for it, but they must not think so. So otherwise they wouldn't have re-signed Douglas, right? They would have signed a safety. So I guess I would probably go with Douglas in there more than anybody, but I would want Alexander in there some. And maybe what you do is on the obvious passing downs, like on dime, which they play what, 10 to 15 snaps a game. I would want Douglas and Stokes on the outside and Alexander and somebody else on the inside. Because if you're in dime, there's a really good chance they're not going to run the ball anyway.
Yeah, I feel like in nickel that the boat's kind of sailed on Savage being in the middle. I'm with you, Pete. If you're looking at skill set, ideally, man, Savage has the physicality. He's got the closing speed. I don't know if he's got the recognition to be that close to the line of scrimmage. You know, he struggled with that a little bit. And he also struggled tackling quite a bit last year as well. But he's got a lot of explosiveness there. But I think that boat's shipped, because one, he plays safety. And two, you got clear top three corners. Who's the odd man out? I mean, you put a safety in one of those corner spots when you already have three. It's a lot of snaps you're missing from talented guys. But look, there is a business side of this that goes beyond just the football field. And maybe it's just me, but I have a very hard time seeing a corner with the outside coverage ability of Jair Alexander. What I mean by that is a guy that believes that he can set the market at the price range when it comes to the cornerback position. Going into the final year of his contract and just raising his hand saying, yeah, I'll play inside, where you don't get paid $20-plus million a year, kind of money that Jalen Ramsey has. If I'm Jair Alexander, you want me to play inside? Fine. Pay me first. And I think that's a perfectly fair stance for him to take. You want me to play inside? Pay me first. I'll play inside. But I'm going to the final year of my contract. And until I see the money that I'm due, especially last year coming off that shoulder injury, knowing that, you know, you want to get paid because security is not long in this league. It's a tough sell. If I'm Jair Alexander, it's a tough sell when you know that you're going to the final year of the contract.
The way to do it's probably the way the Rams use Ramsey. So if they follow that template, that's probably the smartest way to go.
Yeah. And that's a fair point too about the money. It could argue that an inside corner should get paid just as much, if not more, than an outside, considering the skill set is a little more niche. But
Cass, you know, the opposite side of that, you know, I asked Matt LaFleur the question of this morning of whether or not, you know, receiver is maybe less important because how the team is built. He said he would never say less important, because perimeter playmakers yield explosive plays, which yield points. And so because of the explosive plays on the outside, that's why those outside guys are always going to be pay top of market. That's where the explosives come from, more than in the middle of the field. So, you know, it's, and again, Jair Alexander knows, he knows his value on the outside as a guy that can shut down half the field and cover him. So, yeah, you know, it's, the slot, it's such a specified position. It's obviously very important. Joe Barry's defense, the star position, highlights that position. But with the explosives on the outside, I mean, you got to have the sidelines covered.
So it's weird because the sort of the flip side, because it's definitely right. The outside guys, the guys get paid. And it's funny because you talk to all these teams and they all talk about how important the nickel position is and they call it the star position.
Yeah.
And they don't play their star there. And I think back to 2009 through 12 or 13, whatever it was, where the Packers played their best guy there, and Charles Woodson, and he won Defensive Player of the Year. Now, maybe it's that they're just, he's so rare that he was both physically big enough to handle it, athletic enough to handle it, and just smart off the charts to do the job and tough and all that. So maybe that's just, they're so hard to find that it's just never happening, except you get a rare guy like him. But they never put their money where their mouth is when they talk about the corner, the slot corner position, and how important it is. I was talking to Staley, Brandon Staley, coach of the Rams, about this. He was Joe Barry. You know, they run that defense in Green Bay. And I asked him, you know, why don't teams put their best guy in there? He said, well, you know, we do. We put Rams in there some, but they didn't use him there all the time. They used him there a third of the snaps. And he talked about it, that the majority of passes in the league are thrown, I think he said it's either between the hashes or around the hashes. And so he goes, that's where you got to defend. And yet, you know, so why aren't they drafting guys in the first round to be their nickel guys? Starting position. It really is. They're playing 80% of the snaps. So I wonder, I still wonder if at some point the league is going to get to the point where they are going to put their most talented guy in there. But we don't seem to be there yet, except for Don Capers, who did it with Rod Woodson, who won a defensive MVP.
Charles Woodson.
Rod Woodson.
Oh, okay.
Pittsburgh. And then
going old school on me here.
Charles Woodson. And then 10 years later, 15 years later, with Charles Woodson with the Packers. I'll be curious to see what happens the next 5 years.
Scared money don't make money. Speaking of money, it's crazy to think we've gone through this entire podcast thus far and not talked about what Gutekunst and LaFleur had to say about Aaron Rodgers' new deal, that record-breaking deal. I know that we're coming up on our time here, so just real quick, Ryan, I'll start with you. Give us some rundown on anything they said that jumped out at you about Aaron Rodgers' new deal and the possibility of him retiring as a Packer.
Well, first of all, I thought it was just the ocean, you know, the waves and the warm air that was making me feel really relaxed. But it was actually the fact that we've gotten this far without talking about Aaron Rodgers. That's a nice reprieve. It's interesting. You know, the way that the contract is designed is to give Aaron Rodgers an annual kind of pay for play with all that future guaranteed money pushed out, annual decisions. So, you know, Matt LaFleur, he said that he thinks that Aaron Rodgers will go as long as he wants to go. And that's kind of the reality that they're in now. I asked Brian Gutekunst if he thinks that this is the deal that is going to get Aaron Rodgers to the finish line with this team, let him retire as a Packer. And he said that was part of the consideration. I mean, that's certainly something that they thought of when they were negotiating and putting together this extension, this four-year, $200 million extension was, it could be the last one. This and it's remarkable, given where this team and this quarterback was a year ago, to think that that's even possible. But it is likely that Aaron Rodgers will retire a Packer. And Brian Gutekunst, he said that was part of the thought process. That was important to him and to the team. So, you know, we'll see. It's going to be something we talk about next year. It's going to be something we talk about if he plays again the year after that. It's not going away, but the idea that he might play somewhere else is less likely now, much less likely now than it was a year ago. No question.
Pete, did you learn anything over the past 2 days that you had not known going down into Florida?
So I guess one thing I learned, which I really hadn't looked into very hard before, is what coaches and GMs make. Basically, GMs make from $2 million to $6 million, and Gutekunst is towards the lower end, very close, very low on that end. and probably will be getting a raise.
Deserves a raise.
Sometime this offseason. And the coaches make anywhere from about four to in the low 20s if you're Bill Belichick. And there's several in the 9 to 12 million range. LaFleur is at about five, and the average is about seven. And I think he'll be getting a raise sometime this offseason too.
That is very interesting because unlike college where it's a public university, oftentimes coach and GM's contracts are not known to the public. And
no, there's
no
clearinghouse that they have to send it to. It's not like player contracts where they get sent to the PA and all the other agents can see it. So I think the agents who work in and the teams working in that realm, they have to, you know, they have to do their legwork and kind of their, you know, their private eye work, calling sources, figuring out what these guys make. And so it's a little more privileged information than the players' contracts.
And now they can call you. To be honest, that was lower. That's lower than I thought it would be.
And LaFleur, well, he was an unknown when he got the job. He didn't have any leverage. He was a nobody as far as being a head coach candidate. And so they got him on the cheap, but now, it won't be so cheap now and deservedly, because if he were a free agent, he would get snapped up in a nanosecond, you know? I mean, he's proven he can manage people and he can call good games. You know, that's two huge things.
39 and 10 has a way of getting you money.
And yeah, he's got, he's had Aaron Rodgers. That's a huge advantage. He stepped into a good situation, but, Rodgers was trending down on, and his main job number one, and one of the reasons they hired him, was to get the guy playing at an MVP candidate kind of level. And he did, because he was not just a candidate, he won it twice.
Right. And proved he can manage a locker room with that sort of presence, which is huge. Huge as well.
Yeah. The question people had about him, even people in the league who really liked him, was they wondered if he could command the room, 63 players who were thrown the practice squad and 20 coaches and all that. And I haven't, but obviously that's not an issue, or they would not have 39 regular season wins in the last 3 years.
Exactly. As to what he'll do this next year, of course, that is still to be seen. But in the meantime, guys, I know that y'all still have a lot of work to do there in Florida. Hopefully you get in a little bit of relaxation and sunshine as well. So I will let you both get back to it. And for everyone listening, make sure you check out Ryan and Pete's work and wrap up from the NFL owners meeting there in Florida. Tons of good content on PackersNews.com. Pete, thank you for joining us on the podcast this week. Don't be a stranger. We'll have to have you back.
Oh yeah, it was an honor. I can now say I've been on the show. I can leave this business a happy man now.
I'm just going to make clear that you called time with me an honor. I appreciate that, Peter.
Well, I was thinking of Cassidy. Okay. But,
We've got it on tape regardless, though. We can use it however we need to now. Guys, thank you so much. As I said, make sure to read all their coverage from the NFL owners meeting on PackersNews.com. Until next week, this has been the Green 19 podcast brought to you by Dan Salon and PackersNews.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.